I'm here in Clonfard.
Yeah.
And it's just outside Clonus.
Yes.
And I'm talking to Hazel Robinson.
Yes.
And Hazel, I'm talking to you in I suppose in your own home.
Yes.
Here, and John, you're sitting over there as well. Yeah. But tell me, how far away is the border from your house? Where's the Republic?
About 100 yards at the Annie's Bridge.
So that bridge outside your door,
yes.
If I walked over that bridge...
You're in the Republic of Ireland.
Yes.
Okay. So you're that close?
Well, close.
And your farm then, does it actually...
No, we have one farm in Northern Ireland and another one just over the bridge in the Republic of Ireland. Mm.
So your farm is split in two? In two
separate.
In two countries?
Two separate units, like, you know, it's not split in two, I believe it's two separate.
Yeah.
Yeah, porches at different periods of time as well, like.
Oh yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But you were brought up then in the Republic, Hazel.
Yes.
And so what was your maiden name?
Moore.
Where did you come from?
County Cavan, Coot Hill, County Cavan.
And you met John, and how did you meet?
Well, I was born and reared in this area.
Yeah.
John is local. Probably through playing badminton. Yeah, I think that'll be fair to say.
So how many years ago is it now since you're now married?
50. Mm-hmm. Well, it's actually 51 this month. We were married in 66.
Yeah.
1966.
And this is 7 years.
Imagine, and so you're here since?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
So you're here then... John, Hazel, maybe I should ask. Hazel, how long is this farm being farmed by the same family?
Well, John would have farmed with his father and his brother on a farm up the road for, what did you say, John? 33 to...
My father came there in 1936.
In 36?
Yeah.
In 1936, that's... Many is that? Do the songs.
Yeah, well, it's two generations.
Correct.
Two generations.
Right. Yeah.
And is it a big farm? How big is the farm? The two farms?
The farm where I was rearing was almost 100 acres.
Okay.
And yeah, then my father bought me a farm in Northern Ireland, and when I got married, I bought this farm in Southern Ireland.
I see.
You know.
So you were farming how many acres altogether?
Between your brother and you were farming 160 acres anyway, 160 something.
Yeah.
So you were strong farmers, big farmers here in this area.
Rich farmers.
I wouldn't say that.
Yeah.
We'd say small farmers now.
Right.
To be realistic.
And so talk to me now, during the Troubles, when they started in the late 60s and onwards, how difficult was it to farm right here on the border? How was it difficult being a housewife and bringing up a family?
Not really sure. Didn't become any difficult.
I think the checkpoints on the roads were a big. If you went to go to something in Newton Butler, you had to go through the checkpoint, and that bridge that you crossed over down there was blown up. You had to do a detour. And that was an inconvenience because you either were held at the checkpoint and you were maybe a half an hour late, or if you left too early and you got through the checkpoint, you were too early.
And you were held up then, were you? Or
yeah,
you just had to wait?
You had to wait your turn to get through and get checked.
Mm. Oh, was that an inconvenience in farming too? Because you were moving your cattle around, I'm sure, and attending.
Not really, not really. Not so much, no.
Okay.
No.
Was there a lot of movement of dissidents coming back and forth over the bridge from the north to the south?
You mean terrorists?
Yeah.
Well, we wouldn't know if there were, but obviously and clearly there were... Things happened in Newton Butler and there was nobody ever got for them. You know, nobody was ever arrested as a result of them, you know.
So you were telling me a story about some of them came here into the house one time.
Oh yes, that was when we lost our car.
Mm.
Well,
tell me that story.
Well, the children, we had three children at the time. Since after that, there was another one, but about 10, 8 and 6-year-old.
Mm.
And they were watching a programme, I can always remember this, called Professionals on television, in the back living room kitchen. And suddenly, just this terrible banging at the door, somebody kicking the door in, and three armed, masked men with boots on them and balaclavas and guns, they jumped in on top of us, and they said, they put me sitting in a chair, and I, one of the children, pulled on my knee. And then they said to John, get me the keys of your car, we're taking, or no, they asked for guns, which we said we didn't have any guns. And they said, get me the keys of your car, we're taking the car. And John got up and walked to where the keys were sitting up on the top of the press in the kitchen. And he gave them the keys, and they said, oh, just forget, John, what did they say then? Did they say to not ring or something?
Didn't they say much? They would have checked the car on the street first to make sure there's petrol or diesel. They had gone out, and one man started the car, and the other two just kept us covered.
And they kept back, they backed out through the door
with the weapons.
And kept the weapons trained on us all the time. And took the car, and we never saw the car or them since.
What kind of a car was it?
Hillman Hunter.
And was it a new car? Or
yes.
We had bought a brand new, but it was maybe 3 or 4 year old at this stage.
I think it was about 3 year old, a Hillman Hunter. And it was a good car for towing a trailer and that, you know.
And did you ever get compensation for that, the fact that it was taken from you?
No.
Did you ever find out who took your car or anything?
No. We assumed that it was Irish Republican Army.
Yeah.
That's all I can say. I don't know.
What about, was there this bridge beside you? Was it ever blown up or damaged?
Not
or?
That one, the one down that road was.
Yeah, that was blown up. Yeah, but yeah. And did you have any other threats in the house? Like, did anybody else come up or say anything? Or?
Well, there was one time, down in the garden, there was a tailor's dummy.
Mm.
Like dressed up as a dead man with boots and everything on it, and the idea was that we would report it, which we did, and the police would come out, which they did, and then when they were looking at it, a bomb went off. We had to leave the house. A bomb went off on the other side of the road, and one policeman actually got his knee injured.
And did you see that go off?
Yes, we were up at a neighbour's house up on the hill there, yeah.
Well, that here wasn't a personal thing. It was only applied, just after doing this, but it was only applied to get the police lured
into
the area.
We think it was to lure the police into the area. And we also think that the bomb may have been put off maybe from the hill down there, you know, by remote control.
I see.
Yeah.
And
well,
then
we never counted that as personal.
And then we had a small business going here, and you were told, John, one time a man came in and there were UDR men, or was it soldiers? I forget, lying in UDR men or soldiers lying in the hedges round about. You know, obviously they'd been told to look for maybe ammunition. I don't know what they were looking for. But this man came in and he said, I wouldn't have those boys about, you know, get rid of those boys, as if we had any control over what they did. You know, he was saying it was dangerous that we were on the side of the... Would you say that, John?
Not well, before. I don't know, but it was more or less a threat to
it
me.
It was kind of an intimidation.
I just said to this man, James, I didn't send for them.
We didn't send for them. I said, we can't do anything about them, like.
Yeah.
And this was a Catholic man who lived up the road about...
They were just doing their duty, but...
And we had, we had a small shop, and he was coming in. He came into the shop.
You don't almost think we had invited them.
And he...
Imagine.
It was a direct intimidation, like, you know. Mm. Things like that, little things like that.
And did they get under your skin? I mean, did you feel angry about this, or how did you get on? You know, did you feel that you should do something about it, and maybe?
Not really, because I'm quite honest with you. We had a small business going out there, and I'd say 85% of our business was from the opposite side of our house, recorded, like, you know.
Yeah.
85% of our supporters were Roman Catholics, and we were Protestants living on the border, like, so we had a very good relationship with our neighbours and people in the area, like.
But having said that, there was, I suppose, you kind of, I don't know how you, it just wasn't right, you know.
Did you go around feeling that you couldn't say anything, keeping your head down and, you know?
Not really, no, I'll be honest with you about that, and I'm not in this interview, but just if it's of any reason to anybody else. You see, a lot of people that we knew then, friends of ours in Northern Ireland, they were on the security forces, and they were afraid to go into the south.
On the UDR.
Yeah. You know.
Because their life was threatened if they're injured. But thank goodness, we were never in any way threatened with that. We went about it just as a normal duty, just as living here on the border. But we went into Calvin the same as we went into Clonus, or into, you know,
but we knew people in Clonus who couldn't come into Northern Ireland.
They were afraid to come in, and we knew people in Newton Butler were afraid to go into Clonus.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you didn't do security.
And then, forces. After we had our car taken, if I went anywhere, we all went. If John was going anywhere, we all went, because I didn't want to be left at home with the children on my own. So if one went, the entire family went. It's like, a bit like, have you heard the expression, all together like Brown's cows?
Yes. Mm. But it was, in you know, that you were looking out for each other and of
yes.
course, and
yes.
as a family.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
But living in that kind of environment for so long.
But I definitely wouldn't want to. I wouldn't want to suggest to you that we had a bad relationship with our friends and neighbours. By no means.
No. But
you know,
was there a mistrust? You know, would you look at your
certainly after we lost the car, there was mistrust. Definitely, John. Mm. I did. I think mistrust people after that. You know, because just. You know, it wasn't a very nice thing to happen.
Mm.
In fact, it was pretty awful. Apart from the money end of it, it was a very frightening experience. And then for the police to say, well, they didn't want to shoot you, it was a sort of cold comfort.
Tell me that story.
The police said, well, they said to my husband, to John, one thing you can be sure about, they didn't want to shoot you or they would have done it. And it was exactly a week. They wouldn't come out to take a statement. They couldn't come out. They were so afraid. We had to go in. We had to go to Liston Ski Barracks, hadn't we, John?
Mm-hmm.
To give this. They wouldn't come out. They couldn't come out. So that'll tell you now how safe an area this was. You know, can you imagine now that if you sent for the police, they couldn't come into the area?
Because they themselves would be under threat.
Under threat, yes. So
the police had to travel through Southern Ireland to get here, like.
Yeah.
While we were living in with the border.
That is the problem.
That was the problem.
Would you call the police, the guards from the south, or would you call the police?
RUC.
RUC, yeah. Mm. Would you call on the guards at all? You know, they're quite near you on the other side.
No, we wouldn't really, like.
Yeah.
We would have no connection with them at all because our troubles and all related
to
the RUC.
We live in Northern Ireland, like, so you wouldn't.
Yeah.
No, you wouldn't call the guards, no, on that.
Yeah. Even though maybe the barracks would be down the road,
yeah,
you know?
Not really, no. It was just a dumb thing that.
I suppose, but in an emergency, when the border is only 100 yards away, would you not think that.
The guards wouldn't come into Northern Ireland.
Oh yeah, of course. It's a whole different route.
And similarly, the police wouldn't go into the south to sort something out, as far as I know.
Yeah, and bringing up your children then in that atmosphere, it must have been something. You were born in the south. You were Irish, I suppose, and then you came in here and you married John. How do you see yourself now? Do you see yourself Irish, or do you have an Irish passport? Or?
I have an Irish passport, and so does John.
Yeah.
This is, so happens, yeah, because your parents were both born in the Republic.
And I was actually born in Clonus.
And my parents
in
were
Southern
born
Ireland,
four years.
Whilst I lived up at Farmail, like.
Okay.
You know, my home was in Northern Ireland, but I happened to be born in Clonus. I suppose that was the nearest nursing home for my mother to go to, or the hospital or whatever, at that time.
And so, would a part of, are you members of the Church of Ireland? Or
Church of Ireland.
Yeah.
And you're brought up in that tradition, and
that's, right.
Yes,
that's your faith.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because you were a Protestant, big farmer right on the border, were you, did you feel threatened that maybe the land could have been taken from you, or that?
Not in the least.
Well, I suppose it didn't occur to you, to us, like,
no,
that
no.
That would be.
Things no. Never really got to that stage, you know, where people were threatened.
It was more, I mean, there were a few businesses around here, maybe.
Yeah.
More, no, and I think maybe we weren't legitimate targets because we hadn't do anything to do with the security forces
mm-hmm.
at all, you know.
Well, the way on, if I had been on the RU, on the, what did the UDR at the time?
Well, you wouldn't be allowed.
I wouldn't have even showed up in Clonus, like, you know, I'd be terrorised. I wouldn't even have gone into that farm I have in the south because you'd be liable to be shot, like, you know.
Imagine, yeah.
That's
do you
course.
Find that hard to imagine?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. Masters.
Yeah. And every morning you got up to go out farming, you know, did you look over your shoulder to see who's there? And
I didn't really, because I wasn't on anything, I had no reason, like, you know. Yeah.
Well, in fairness, John, after the car incident,
yeah,
you would
have been
afraid.
Shocked and frightened yeah. after that, like,
yeah.
Exactly, yeah. But previous to that, like, because I hadn't any grievance with anybody, you know, Protestant or Catholic, by either sides of the border, like, you know.
Yeah.
We tried to, I suppose, live at peace with, you know, and not get involved in anything, you know.
Yeah. What about your own traditions and customs, like the 12th of July march? I mean, would you go out marching?
I don't want to, and then I just got away from it, to be honest with you.
Mm. Why is that now?
Well, what would you say?
Well, quite honestly, I there's a lot of things about Orangism that I'm not entirely at one with.
Mm.
Whilst I wouldn't be anti-Orangeism, like, but I just, you know, down around Belfast and that, I think that, I don't know, I wouldn't like to be associated with the way they carry on sometimes.
Yeah.
Is that fair enough?
That's fair enough. That's yeah. fair enough.
That's saying too much.
Yeah, yeah, but it's saying something. And the do you see a time when everybody can live side by side without having to be suspicious of your neighbour or troubled by your...
Ach, it has been much better recently, hasn't it, John? The troubles...
Well, if you listen to the news and you listen to Arlene Forster and Michelle O'Neill having a conversation, you wouldn't be very hopeful of peace. That's the way yeah. up the whole situation. But it doesn't bother yeah. me, because, as I say to me, it's not going to affect us one way or the other what to do.
Yeah.
To be
yeah.
honest with you.
Well...
Yeah.
I wouldn't worry me what to do either.
Well,
yeah.
I think.
Tell me, when you're voting, tell me, do people look for your vote, or?
Yes.
Well, this year we had a visitor in the form of Mr. Elliot looking for our vote.
That's the first time in all of time he asked that gentleman you're going, and
yeah.
I certainly told him I appreciated it. Tom Elliot's
yeah.
the first man ever darken stuff to see on the seat in all the time we were here.
In 50 years.
And why were you sidelined, do you feel?
I have no idea.
I'm not sure.
I don't know.
We just counted. We just felt we weren't counted for any living here out on the border, like, you know, were more or
less
isolated, you know, on a sort of almost, you nearly think, pushed into the Republic, if you know what I mean. You know, kind of.
Yeah, you're just floating on both sides.
That's right, yeah.
And so, yeah, it's interesting. And but having opportunity, I mean, you would vote Eileen Foster, of course. I mean, that's, or would you?
I'd vote for Tom Elliott.
No, would you?
Oh, yes. Vote for Eileen Foster.
No, we aren't DUP.
Okay.
Oh, no, we're not DUP.
Just asked.
You're getting an answer. We're voting for UUP.
Yeah.
If we did vote, and it's seldom we vote.
Yeah.
I'd ask with you.
Well, we do vote a bit, John. We didn't vote for about the Brexit because we really didn't know who to vote for. We didn't know. We actually did not know. We weren't well enough informed to make an informed choice.
Which is the one other time there was proper voting, and we happened to be coming from Inniskillen that day, and I said, so we'll, when we're in the town, we're going to vote, but if it was at home, we wouldn't come in to vote.
Yeah.
We're passing through the water.
Yeah.
And only for that reason, we wouldn't have voted.
But just to go back to the Troubles again, when all these bombs and shooting was going on around you, did you have any of your friends or relations or anybody killed or injured?
Well,
or
I didn't have
anybody killed.
I didn't have anybody killed, but I did have a nephew sent off as a human bomb, but the thing fell off. His name was Peter North, and the bomb that was in the van that he was put in to drive to down to Rosslea, the thing fell off and it didn't go off, so he was lucky. But he had to go to England after that.
When did this happen?
What year was that?
I don't know. 1980s, was it?
Maybe sometimes between 1880, would it have been? I was taking the 80s. It was after that, anyway.
Yes. Yeah. And what was your, excuse me, what was your nephew's name?
Peter North.
North. And where did he live?
He lived at Clogher House, round the road, at a business.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and somebody came and just asked him?
Well, they had a business, and my sister was working in the barracks as a cook.
And see, that was part of the reason.
And that was part of the reason they were targeted, because she was working for the security forces.
Yeah.
And they came and took him away as a human bomb, put him in a van and sent him off to deliver a bomb into the checkpoint. But it fell off, which God didn't let it happen.
And the van kept driving in the van, or
I don't really know, John. Can you remember what actually the I think he drove into the security thing, but the thing had fallen off, so it didn't go off.
Didn't go off anyway.
Didn't go off.
Did he run away to England afterwards, or?
Yes, he had to go to England. He was told to go.
Because his life was still threatened.
Yeah. Well, he can come home now. He's grand now. He comes home regularly, maybe once or twice a year. The family moved to Lisenski.
Yeah.
So.
Imagine that's frightening. I mean, when you. It's very close to home now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, that's it.
Yeah, well, when you actually. After hearing your story, I mean, that is the that somebody could actually do that, you know, and he wasn't, he was an innocent victim.
Well, I think he was innocent, but his mother was working for the, my sister was working for the security forces, and I think that was the reason.
As
that,
a cook?
Pardon?
As a cook?
Yeah, in the barracks, yeah. She, she probably was a catering supervisor or something, I don't know what her title was, but.
Yeah. That's upsetting too, isn't it?
It was upsetting, yeah. Very, 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 very hard because they had to leave their home then. So.
Well, I appreciate you telling me that. How do you feel now? Do you think when people talk about United Ireland, is that something that could happen, or would you not like to see that happen?
I think it will happen. I think it's inevitable. You not think that, John?
Look, quite honestly, as a working class man who's settled in a farmer, I can't see that it'll really affect us.
Yeah.
That's my view of it. That's my honest view of it. Like, a lot of Protestant people...
Maybe we're not as...
It's not the sort of thing I would lay awake at night thinking about.
Yeah.
No, I can't. No.
It depends on what your views on these things are, of course.
Of course, yeah.
Isn't it? You know.
But the I could ask you loads of questions about being a farmer on both sides of the border. It kind of suits a farmer that if the cattle are going well on one side, or cattle feed is cheaper on one side, you're in a position to buy it.
Well, to be quite honest with you, probably when we started farming first down there in the 60s and 70s, there would have been a different approach to cattle movement in that time. But as it is at the moment now, there wouldn't be very much of that, because what animals we have in Southern Ireland, we buy and sell in the south, and what we have in the north, we keep in the south. You don't mix them or anything. You have two different herds. Because with tags and all the traceability.
Identification of animals came in, and it's a whole different system.
It's a whole different ball game, because, you know, people, bigger men than us, made a lot of money on the border by driving animals here and there and that. But the common market did away more or less with all that, I think, didn't it?
More or less. Well, it's also this... the herd identification and all the animals are all, you know, the way you can trace your animal.
If we have cattle now to sell in the mart, we go to Enniskillen mart.
Yeah.
And if I have cattle to sell in the south, I go to Cavan mart.
I see.
But the Cavan cattle, you couldn't bring them to Enniskillen because they wouldn't be allowed into that mart. They are free state animals, as they call them. And so the other way around, if you've got the northern cattle to Cavan, the northern cattle wouldn't be allowed.
You've learned a lot.
Yeah. Well, that is the case.
Is that the case?
That's the case, yeah.
Well, yeah. But I think there was a time when they used to cut the ears off the cattle so that they would be worth nothing.
I was very serious. And then they used to punch a hole in their ear, and they'd have to do maybe so long in Northern Ireland before they could be sold in Northern Ireland. You know, there were different restrictions on the border at that time for moving cattle.
Yeah.
But there's none of that at the moment now, definitely not.
They were different times, weren't they? Yeah. Were they extraordinary times?
Yeah.
Well, I suppose they were, you know, but I don't really remember an awful lot. I do remember, but you don't pick out the bits to remember, you know. It's just change happens gradually.
Right. But
it's interesting because I can see you, it's new to you, like.
It's new to me.
It's very difficult for you to understand.
Whereas it's probably everyday life for years.
You're going round different houses and people don't want to know what anyone you want. But are any things are sort of starting to make sense to you now? Is it coming together for you, like, what you're hearing?
It is. It has opened my eyes to the violence. To the extraordinary way that people lived in fear.
Yeah.
The way that people couldn't trust our neighbour.
That's right.
And you had to live like that for the bones of 30 years? Yeah. 20, over 20 years anyway.
Yeah.
That's it's a long time. Mm-hmm.
But about voting that, I know a lot of people would definitely have a different aspect of voting to what I have to it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people living in this area. The 12th of July is nearly the day of the year for them. You know, you'd be heard saying, I wouldn't go to the 12th. You know, there are people like that. I'm sure you've been with some of those people, I'm sure.
Well, they are. I mean, they
It's a big day on the calendar. It's a big day on the calendar.
Yeah. Listen, thanks. Thanks for talking to me, John, in the end. Hazel, thanks for talking to me. Thank you.
Well, I don't know what I'd sound like on that thing at all.
No, it's lovely, and I appreciate what you told me. Thanks.